Hi everyone, welcome to the timingresearch.com crowd forecast news, episode number 289 for February 1st, 2021. My name is David Cosmeter. I'm the creator of timingresearch.com, and you should be seeing my screen right now. And today we're going to be talking about the S&P 500 and everything else going on in the markets. So today I've arranged for Michael Filigera to join us again. And Jim, the option professor, will be moderating again. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to him.
Okay. Thanks a lot, David. Michael, back in town here. Let's get a little background on yourself and a little bit what's going on at Logical Signals.
Hi, I am Michael Filigera. I am still Logical Signals, but we've incorporated it into a much larger website, and that is TradersHelpingTraders.com. And over there, we are really beginning to launch the new site. I mean, it's totally available right now. And on that site, I will be providing, hopefully, at least three times a week, a podcast, which would just be market analysis, and also some written analysis. And it's going to be dividing it up. I have one site under Traders Helping Traders called Eye of the Storm. The other one is Logical Signals. Both are going to be utilized to present analysis ideas and other things. And I'll tell you more about that later.
Sure. Okay. Well, today is Monday. And sometimes we start out the day with where do you think the S&P will end up for the week? It started in the 3,700 and change area. And where do you think it'll be on Friday? Up or down?
It's really a coin toss from right where it's sitting. But I am going to stick to my larger Elliott count. And I'm going to say higher.
Yeah, because some of the Elliott guys are saying that the move down toward 3650 was a wave two, and now we're supposed to be having a wave three to the upside. Is that kind of how you're reading it? Or
I would call that move down to 3650 an ABC down.
Okay.
And now it's launching in its next five waves up, if that's the case with the S&P. It's not crystal clear yet, but the recovery off of the overnight lows.
Yeah.
Was quite nice.
It was powerful. Was there any news on it, or was it just a technical turnaround?
There was ISM this morning, and there was another, I think, Chicago PMI or somebody else came in, but it was ISM that really kind of helped to kick it in gear. But the other thing I think we need to remember is that it's the 1st of February.
Yeah, people new put money. Positions on in the beginning of the month.
And new money.
Yeah.
Or just, you know, the monthly money that people want to allocate
right.
To investing. So I think that's coming in. I'm seeing a lot of, you know, obviously a lot of buying, and it's broad. So
yeah.
They're coming in and taking all the stocks in the index, or most of them, I should say. So yeah, I actually think that we'll end higher, being that most people are probably quite used to trading. That does ebb and flow. So we'll have rallies, we'll have little declines, but I think the bias will continue to be to the upside. And I'm going to give that a 55%.
Yeah, more likely than not, the way it's starting out anyway.
Yeah.
Anything you're looking for? We've got jobs report on Friday. Anything else? Any levels you're looking for? I mean, look to me like 3740 gets taken out. You're going to go fill the gap around 3890, 3880. Excuse me, 3780,
yeah.
3790. There's a gap there that I guess they're going to fill. And then is that where the movie gets a little bit more dodgy once it fills that gap?
Yes. I think that, well, I, of course, really use my moving averages here. And so I have an hourly 200-day moving average at 3780 approximately.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think actually that's where it's headed now.
Right.
So it might get to that this afternoon. If it breaks that, it really starts to take up to that round number 3800
right.
and 3820,
yeah.
et cetera, et cetera.
Now, well, then it could make a run to new highs.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It can. In fact, if it pans out that the pattern off of the high so far down to overnight low, the Globex lows, if that remains intact as three waves down, new highs should definitely be expected.
Yeah. The key is this 3780 to 3800 area, because if they can't get through there, we're just looking at a bounce back to fill the gap and then a fall apart again.
Yes.
So that's pretty much how I see it as well. I think obviously longer term, we've got good stuff going on. But the long-term averages that I look at on my 20-year graph, you know, they come in at like 3,000 on the S&P, like 1,500 on gold. And so, and silver probably $19. So these markets, are definitely extended. That doesn't mean they can't continue, but extended markets and high enthusiasm and a high VIX, you just don't know exactly how it'll unwind. Maybe the high VIX is really the fuel on what keeps it going, because it's a wall of worry kind of deal, right?
Yes. And I think that's a good correlation that you're putting together there. But even the NASDAQ is continuing to push and push and push, and it keeps reaching levels that could hold it, but then it kind of pulls back and then it pushes up through the level. Yeah. So same type of picture exists in the NASDAQ as exists here in the S&P. So I think, I prefer not to get married to any particular side, but I like leaving open all the possibilities. So that just helps to gauge the trading as it starts to break above moving averages. For example, on the daily chart, it's just popped above, or it's up testing the daily 8-day moving average. And so it's already gotten above the 50, the 20, and now it's popping above the 8. If it can get above that 8, which again is right up at that, 3780 area, well, then it's off to the races, because then we've cleared all the hurdles that could prevent it.
And it might just in history be a situation where a situation last week caused people to have to sell stocks to pay for losses. And that phenomenon was temporary, which is what Kalanovic over at JP Morgan was saying, is that this is extremely short term in nature and we're going to get back on the bicycle. But so far, that seems like a fairly accurate appraisal. Last night, it didn't at 36.50, but today it's right back up in their face, 100 points higher.
Right. Now, bear in mind that I think every time we push to a new all-time high, we're beginning to skate on a razor blade, because I don't think we have enough oomph in terms of positive backup to cause a massive, we're all going to jump in, we're all going to get long, because I think a lot of people still are sitting on long positions. And what we saw last week and then the Friday was nothing more than adjustments going into the last January expiration. And so
the other thing that's confusing is Tom Lee of Fundstrat is saying that in the last 10 years, only 6% of capital that came into the markets went into stocks. And then a guy from Citigroup was on this morning saying, I don't know where he gets that number from. The Federal Reserve's numbers say that household exposure to stock as a percentage of their assets has never been higher. So on one hand, it looks like, it's very frothy for these households because of their percentage of assets in the stock market is extremely high. And the other guy is saying hardly anybody's bought stocks in 10 years. So there's all kinds of money that's going to come in. I don't know where the truth is, because it's confusing to me.
It can be. What I have heard is that the longs in the market, or just the amount of money that's been put into the market, is sitting up in that 1%. So when we're not really seeing the broad participation of people moving in, and it's being limited to that upper echelons of traders, then it starts to flash warning signs. But I hear what you're saying, and I can't disagree with it.
I mean, both people seem to be very credible. The guy from Citigroup has been around for decades, and the other guy, Lee, is fairly reputable. So I don't know how two reputable people could read the tea leaves so differently,
Well, yeah, I mean, there's that point.
I mean, it seems like a factual, it's not a opinion, In fact, the guy in Citigroup was saying Lee must have an opinion that only that much has happened, because the evidence seems to be contrary to that.
Right. But I think what's kind of upset the apple cart with all of that is all the stuff that's been happening in GameStop and GameStop, AMC, and now, and we can talk about this in your next little segment that you want to do, silver.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like I say, silver is going to be interesting, because some people are thinking that by Wednesday, the phenomenon that we're looking at here will be over. And I'd be very interested to see if that's the case, because, when you hear they ran out of coins, systems are breaking down in the physical area, that doesn't happen at the lows, you know what I mean? That either happens at a high point or during a panic. So it could be a panic and we could go to $35 an ounce on silver, or it could be a deal where cooler heads will prevail by Wednesday. So it'll be very interesting the next 48 hours what happens to silver.
Because I think what they're trying to do, at least with the smaller investors who've all coming in as a collective are trying to do is squeeze the shorts and silver. And it's like, guys, I'd be real careful because those shorts
and silver. No, and the other thing is there's not a shortage of silver, according to what these people are saying. And so it takes a lot of buying power to squeeze a market that doesn't have a lot of shorts in it.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
And you didn't get from $12 silver to 30 by putting shorts on. You know what I mean? People are long that market.
Right.
Exactly. I want to ask you a question. I'm looking at a day graph here, and I'm looking at a market. I don't know if I have current prices. The S&P around 36.70 about ballpark?
Yeah, 37.67.
Okay. So we're looking at new highs, and I have a 14 RSI that seems to not be making new highs. Is a divergence there of interest?
That would be divergence, but I think the RSI will catch up.
Okay, because I'm wondering if this thing started to break under 37.60 right now, if we wouldn't get some kind of a reaction back down, maybe a 10-point reaction to 37.50 anyway.
Oh, if it breaks down below 37.60, I don't know. I might give it, you're going to have to give it a little bit more room, I think. Don't forget that RSI on a daily takes a little bit longer for that boat to turn around. Put it on an hourly and see the difference.
Okay.
Because this morning, as the market was dropping very early, you know, in that first hour, I kept thinking, well, my stochastic momentum was telling me, oh yeah, it definitely has the room. But then it started to not really want to go down anymore. So I thought that's bottoming. But because it's a daily, it takes the boat a lot longer to turn around. And now that it has, it's beginning to angle up.
With the 10-day moving average on the day chart, it's given you a pretty good idea that it turned up at around 36.60, 36.70. But the direction of the average has been good. The prices have violated the average a little bit, but the direction has been pretty good. And the direction right now is still pointing up.
Yeah. I mean, and also
I'm just saying, it looks to me like if you could break 37.60 and if the RSI started to turn down.
We could. That I totally agree with.
Yeah. Because this seems like the neighborhood.
Volatility, of course, stronger if the market turns and starts to drop, like we saw last week, and then in the Globex yesterday. I think that momentum will certainly just get this thing to fly. But what I like is that I also take a look at this candle, this hourly candle, or even this daily candle.
Uh-huh.
Look how bullish that is.
Yeah,
it's engulfed. It is totally engulfed what took place in Globex.
Right.
That's going to leave a very bullish feel or bullish bar on a daily chart. So expectations would be for continued upside.
Yeah.
The market can't pull back, but because it's a daily, it's really going to have to pull back and start to break those moving averages. If it pulls back and breaks the 50-day moving average on a daily chart, then I'm with you. Then I'm like, okay, we're going to go below 36.50 now, folks, because it's got the momentum to do it.
Yeah, this 3,800 seems to be a number on the 10-day average. If you put on a six-month, one-year, two-year graph, it comes in right. They all come in right around 3,800. So I would imagine 3,800 is a fairly reasonably important place, huh?
Yes, but also I think because you've got your moving averages gathering right there, it's going to be stiff resistance.
That's what I'm trying to say. It's a really good line in the sand. If you really want to get bullish and not think that you're buying a rebound, maybe seeing something established above that 3,800, and then you could make a better case that maybe the lows are in on the pullback.
Yes, I agree with that. I agree with that statement. I think that's very well said. Yeah.
What about a specific stock like Apple? I mean, that thing pulled back to like 130. I mean, is that pullback over? Because these guys have got, they're borrowing money again, and they're borrowing tons of money. They've got tons of money. And obviously the plan must be to buy back their own stock with some of that money.
Without announcing it, that would be my takeaway.
Yeah. And so, Apple's not can you buy it. Apple here with a stop under 130 and just go to bed? Or what do you think?
Hold on. I mean, I won't.
I think the low was about 130 last week, wasn't it? Maybe there was an intraday low that went lower.
It did go lower. The low from last week was, no, actually, it was 130.21. So you're right.
Yeah. You know, big sharp pullback to 130. And now you've got these guys borrowing money, and the stock's back up to 135 ballpark, and having a good day today.
Again, on a daily chart, Apple has got its 8-day moving average. You use a 10, I like to use an 8, gives it a little bit cleaner. Okay. And those are right above us at like 135, 136.
So you'd really like it to close above there to get back on the train.
Yeah, because then one, if it does that and it can actually close, so the daily close would have to be above those moving averages to set them in stone as support.
You know, the other thing is, you know, it's such a big part of these indexes. If anybody believes we're going to go take out 3860, you've got to figure Apple's going to be in the game, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes, I agree.
And, you know, if people want to buy indexes, then they got to buy Apple. So, you know, they've got organic buying coming in from everybody who does indexing, and then they've got their own money they can put in there. So there is quite a bit of a backstop on the bid side for Apple, simply because of all that liquidity.
Right. I did see, you know, they were coming into sellers early, and then came that news that they're tapping into the cheap money.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it stopped and it turned and it started to go up, and it really hasn't stopped.
Now, like I say, there's two things going on that I wanted to get your opinion on. You know, there are people, and I happen to be one of them, that think there could be a very, very big upside coming, and you could get 4,000, 4,400 on the S&P, or even beyond, simply because of the fact that money flow is going to be coming in from all the millennials and everybody who's on the sideline, and they're going to need to make some money. So there's going to be great cash flow coming in. And then I compare it a little bit to real estate. In other words, when San Francisco real estate goes up, the property didn't change. The per square foot they're willing to pay changed.
Right.
And so that's a good example of how valuation can change on things. So if people are coming into the stock market in droves all of a sudden, and the stock only has a finite amount pretty much unless they issue more shares, then the per square foot or PE ratio on the stock can go up, and that makes the stock go up even if the earnings don't jump as much as the stock.
Right.
Do you see any relevance and comparison to real estate there, where obviously lots of cash goes into real estate in San Francisco during periods of time, California real estate generally,
or
nowadays real estate all over, and the building doesn't change, but the amount they'll pay per square foot change, not dissimilar to how much they'll pay for an earnings.
Very good point. I happen to live in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, when you speak about San Francisco real estate, the one thing that we saw in the pandemic, and then as it was kind of crest or dropping us in December and into January, rentals went down. You know? So the median rent dropped, I think, 21 or close to 25%, maybe even a little bit more. But
wouldn't that be correlated to the unemployment rising?
It was, and the fact that all of the big tech companies in San Francisco were basically telling all the people, hey, you can work from home for perpetuity. And so a lot of them moved out of the Bay Area, left a vacuum in terms of rentals and availability. But the point that I think is right in line with what you're saying is existing home sales and new sales skyrocketed. And where it's skyrocketing is not in the $1 to $2 million range. It's in the $8 to $20 million range.
Oh.
So yeah, there's a lot of money that people got their bonuses, people did really well, or people cashed out. I mean, even for me, there was a family who lived across the street from me. He sold his company. He got bought out in December. Boom, sell a house and go.
Right.
And he moved up to Oregon because he doesn't want to pay tax.
Right.
But in any case, what I'm saying is that the buyers for the higher level properties are still there, and they're ready to plunk down their money and move in.
The Sausalitos and that kind of thing?
No, it's all basically San Francisco.
Oh, just in the town. In town.
To go in the outer rim of the Bay Area, but it's in the city, and they're paying a big money.
They're paying because money flow is entering into the market, and ergo they can get higher per square foot because there's only a finite amount of these places.
That's correct.
So if there's only a finite amount of stock available, and you get a wave of people wanting to get involved with stocks, because obviously now with the social media, every Tom, Dick, and Harry's going to get in there in some way, shape, or form, that's a lot of cash flow coming into a market. And when you have cash flow coming into a market, your valuations can expand.
True.
And that's why Apple used to be 20, it's at 40 or whatever it's at, and it doesn't seem to be viewed as frothy because people are just willing to pay more for a pair share of Apple than they were.
Right. I mean, even since we've just been talking about Apple, it's gone up another 50 cents, which for Apple folks is that's not a bad move.
Well, it's up 2.5% for the day. That's even a better move.
Oh, yeah. Right. But it propels, and as you said, it propels all the indexes.
Yeah, because again, you have to buy Apple. These index guys have to buy the stocks that are in there. And Apple is a big part of most of these indexes.
Right, right. It's interesting. And once you can connect the dots, which I think you've just done very neatly and very, you know, clearly, that should help investors or people just, you know, looking to play the market. Connecting those dots is going to help you pick your entry and your exit.
Now, there are some people who think, and I'm a little bit still thinking it could happen, but I will stop thinking that if we break above 38.50, that there is a potential in the next 90 days to have a sharp, bone-jarring drop, and a drop that would bring your S&P maybe into the 34, 3600 range and provide an opportunity to get in before the second half surge. It's such a popular thing, this second half surge, though. You sometimes wonder, is it so easy? You know what I mean?
Agreed.
I mean, unanimity of opinion that the second half is going to be unbelievable. The earnings are going to go up and people are going to get out of their houses and spend money like drunken sailors because they're so dying to go on trips and go to the restaurants. Well, maybe going out to restaurants and spending $200 to buy some pasta, you know, isn't going to be as popular as it was, you know?
Well, yeah, I hear you. What I think is that, again, and I try to relate it all to Elliott Wave patterns. And as we were just describing, right now, the markets have left a three-wave down pattern off of the existing all-time high in the S&P down to the Globex low from yesterday. That is three waves down. If it starts to break back above 3,800, which it's basically knocking on the door for S&P.
Right. I mean, exactly.
What's 32 points between friends.
Right.
Then, yes, I say new highs, which does not negate the bone-chilling, jaw-dropping decline.
Yeah.
Because I think you have to look at the bigger picture and determine what would that be finishing. If it moves to new all-time highs, what is that finishing? And by my calculation, it's finishing cycle level. And we have to think that this finishing cycle wave started in March of 2020. So we're already almost a year into it.
Right.
And so it could finish and set the stage for us to have this cycle level correction, which will be, again, an ABC down. But you must put in perspective, it's on a cycle level. So you really kind of got to go out to your weekly and your monthly charts to begin to see what kind of devastation that can have. So when you mentioned 3,400, absolutely in the realm of possibilities, and bone jaw dropping, that could be just the absolute first wave down.
Well, because people are going to be very much leaning to the upside. And so, you know, right. the first 150 points, they're going to say, oh, it's just a dip like everything else was.
Yes.
And so it would have to be a pretty deep wound to get people thinking negatively. And
But even 3,400, again, put it in perspective to where we came from. We came off of 2170 to up to where we are now. So 3,400 is nothing.
No. But it would be a better entry level than 3,800.
Absolutely. But I think it would be too early. I think you could play the bounce, even on a daily and a weekly chart. You could play the bounce, would be worth getting long. But then when that wave is done, there's going to be another jaw-dropping decline.
There is a group who believe that, 3,800, 4,000 is the high for the year. And I think what they're thinking is that we would get a drop and then the rebound would take us up to maybe a little bit of a new high. That's more of a sober forecast than, you know, the ones that are saying, you know, 4,500 and 4,400 and all that kind of stuff.
Right. It's really, and I don't disagree with that analogy at all. I think that there are many times, you know, if we hit that high, we make a new high, that finishes cycle wave 5, and now we begin a large cycle wave decline. Cycle wave A could bring us down, cycle wave B could take it to new highs before you get that jaw-dropping, bone-crushing, finishing C wave decline. So everything you're talking about remains active. And then once things start, then you can start to fine-tune what you believe or what the market is telling you, where it's going to go and what it's going to do. But right now, all of what you said remains an active thought in terms of the possibilities of what the market could do.
Yeah. And it'd be interesting to see how we close out this month of February, because if we do fail to take out the 3870 area, then you would have a monthly high point surrounded by lower highs.
Right.
And then people who like to do selling with some point to defend against, they could do selling and then they could defend a 3870 high point.
Yeah, and you're right. And that would be it. Exactly.
Because right now they're not, they're defending infinity, really.
I like that. Can I use that one?
Yeah. You know, the other thing on my longer term charts that I'm seeing in stocks is that there's a pretty significant divergence between these new highs we're seeing and the 14 RSI. I mean, if you go to a 10-year graph, you'll see that this market has been, you know, gone nuts above 3,400, but it has not seen the 14 RSI making any new highs. And the last time we got that kind of a divergence really came in at the end of 19 going into 20, where we went to 3,400 without a lot of conviction.
I'm looking at that. Yes.
Now, the RSI is still above 50 on all this stuff. So, you know, anything above 50 tells me bull market still.
Yes, I would agree with you. And I'm now on my monthly chart in the S&P, and the 50-day moving average is at 29.10.
Yeah, mine came in at around $3,000. So it's the same idea. And, you know, that was the thing that kept me bullish after we went down, because when we went down to 21.75, my feeling was the average at that point was 2,800. And I said, that's way, way oversold. And Tom, Dick, and Harry are just dumping stocks like morons, and the Fed's coming. So you don't want to be getting out of stock when Tom, Dick, and Harry is selling and the Fed's coming. So that was pretty obvious to me that it was time to buy, not sell. But it didn't tell me that we were back in an uptrend until we closed back above 2,800 on the S&P. And once we did that, we never looked back.
It did not look back. We had that little slip back down to about 2,500, and then there was just no looking back. Yeah. And I think that's the point you're talking about.
Yeah. But in history, you generally don't stay this extended from the long-term averages forever. So, and especially in the first year of a new president, they seem to try to get some of the junk out of the system, because he's got three more years to make up for it, and then the land of milk and honey can happen in the second term.
So they say. So yes, I like that analogy too.
After 2000, very rough racket, 2001, 2002, recovered a little bit by 04, and then 04 to 08 was great. 08 was a nightmare, 09 and 10, then by 12 we were recovering, and then 12 to 16 was what?
A get very out good of the time. Way. 12 to 16, so, out of the way, there was no going back. But
there was a lot less of Fed printing money and buying their own securities and all that stuff back then, though, too. So that's what changes the game.
Now, the other thing in using my moving averages, I'm sure you're the same, I continue to look at, you know, the monthly chart and the weekly chart and even the daily chart continue to be in a perfect formation. All the 200, the 100, this is on my monthly, the 200, the 100, the 50, the 20, the 8 are all pointing higher.
Yeah.
So even with the pretty intense selling that we had last week, didn't put even a blip in those moving averages.
Right.
So again, keeping your time frame in mind, if you're a long-term trader, you're paying attention to that and you want to buy this. You're
exactly
in there because it didn't put a blip in it. In fact, the monthly, it came down overnight and kissed the really the shortest time frame I can have on a monthly, so it doesn't make any difference, but it kissed the 8-day there. And then, no, it didn't. It's even shorter. It kissed the 4. I only have on a monthly chart, the 4-day moving average really has no bearing, but it provided support for this thing to launch the rally it's doing right now.
Right.
So I keep all of that in mind. But if I was a long-term trader, that selling last week you're right. And that selling last week into the globex from yesterday really was just a buying opportunity.
Oh yeah, no doubt about it. And like I say, I think we're both in agreement that this 3,800 area, if it gets taken out, that wave 3 that the one guy was talking about, or however you're counting it on the Elliott stuff, it could surprise people, because again, a lot of people got negative a little bit short term, and got a jobs report coming out Friday. You know, if they get a good number there with the PMI numbers or the number, what was the one that came out today? The
ISM
numbers, you know, then obviously, and people, again, like you say, beginning of the year, they like to plow their money in.
Yeah. And I kind of was waiting for that in January and didn't see it. So I'm seeing it now. And so, which just tells me that they held off.
Yeah.
But now they're happy. Now they're okay.
They did dump value pretty good though lately. And so, you know, stuff in the banks again got hit a little bit, you know, after they came out with good earnings. Because in my weekly report, I was saying you want to sell the fact. In other words, when JP Morgan went to like 148 or whatever it went to on good news, you know, that was a sell. When Citigroup went to like 65 or whatever it hit, that was a sell. When Apple hit 145 after their report, that was a a sell. So we've had the sell the fact trade, yeah. And then we've had a nice big pullback. So that was a good idea. Now the question is that just a pullback and we're off to the races? And that answer will be coming here pretty quick.
Yes, it will. And I think that's a very good point. I know it's going to make itself very clear shortly. Right. And again, in the S&P, it's going to be 3,800. Now, if it gets up there, kisses it and bounces around and cannot break cleanly above it, well, then you know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You figured that one out. But
a lot of the stuff I find interesting is in the energy area, the industrial area, the banking area, because they pay dividends. And it's nice to be getting paid 2.5-3.5% on your money while you are holding something, so that if it takes time to go up, at least, and then their valuations are like 15 PE, 17 PE. So if they get hit with the valuation bug, you got a nice big bang to the upside in those sectors, and you've got a cash flow coming in, and that ain't a bad combo.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I wanted to ask you, actually last week when we were together, what do you think about the Dow utilities?
Well, the utilities are a little bit of a different game, because again, they're very interest rate sensitive, and it looks to me like the bond market and the dollar are still, while they're breathing again, they still have some pretty heavy clouds above them. And there is a lot of pretty smart people who think that inflation is going to come back. But, you know, like if I'm playing the utilities now, one of the things that I focus on is a Vanguard fund, VPU. The moving averages are still rising. As long as it's trading like 130 something, as long as it stays above 130, you know, you can get over 3% dividend and it's still a hold. You start breaking under 130, then something's going on there and you got to say goodbye to utilities. And what's probably going on is a spike up in interest rates, which higher rates and inflation are not good for utilities.
No. And the other thing I wanted to ask you, I don't know if you follow them, but municipal bonds.
Well, I'm very heavy onto that because, again, I think the money's, and it has been, comes into those because of the higher taxes that we're going to have to pay. And so basically, and I think that clearly there's going to be a support for cities and municipalities and states. So I don't think the default risk on a big diversified portfolio is much of a risk. And I think almost 3% tax-free, if you can get it, is not bad in some of these durations that are only like 6-year duration, which is not too bad. So the duration, you know what I mean? So if you buy a fund that has a maturity of 15 or 14 years, but because they have all bonds coming due at different times, the duration's only 6. That's not too bad.
So within that fund, yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, yeah. That allows you to get the better yield and also get the benefit of a diversified fund that's been around for a while.
And you still think that it's the best, your better idea as an investor in municipals would be to go with that Vanguard fund that you mentioned?
Well, I mean, you know, that I'm not recommending it. I'm just saying that's something that I follow and that I have an interest in. There's many of them out there, but, you know, I enjoy that particular one because of their diversification, their high quality ratings ratings. And, you know, the management fee on it is peanuts compared to what these other people charge.
And yeah, that's kind of what I was going for. So it's like, you know, because they're good at their diversification of various municipalities and states.
Yeah, a lot of people who don't want to have a lot of nonsense in their portfolio, you know, stuff like GameStop and stuff, because, you know, they don't want they have play money, you know, and it goes up 500%, great, but when it comes down 250%, you know, you wouldn't want that to be your IRA.
Right.
So the bottom line is indexing is looking more and more reasonable to people who want to see their account grow, but they don't want it to go up and down like a cyclone.
Right. Because I get asked a lot, it's like, do I have a particular municipality or area within our country or even within my state of California that I like? I mean,
you know how long it takes to do the research on that and to be accurate on that? You know, why not dish it off to a guy who's got a company that does that for a living, and you can see their top 10 holdings and you can look at their portfolio holdings and you can see the ratings on what they've got. Right. And they give you a 1-year, 5-year, 3-year, 10-year track record of it. And then, you know, basically they pay monthly. It sounds like a lot easier game than staying up till 4 a.m. trying to figure out if Fresno's going under.
Well said.
Or make it Stockton.
I like Fresno. That works.
Yeah. The raisin companies are all belly up, right?
And I'm telling you, California raisins are still the best.
What about that garlic place, Gilroy?
Gilroy is garlic, yeah.
But anyway, let's switch gears here before we run out of time. Let's hit those metals. And let's start out with the big elephant in the room, which is the silver. Everyone's heard the story about the Reddit crowd is springing it up. And of course, it had a big move overnight. It went well above $30. bucks, and now it's trading in the 20s, I guess, 29s, I mean.
Yes, silver, what a nice rally.
Oh, yeah.
It got up, I think this is just a little pullback, because again, I'm out there, and let me just pull it down. I was looking on a monthly chart. That's not going to work for us. Let me go look at the daily. Oh, yeah, it did a beautiful breakout. Mm-hmm. I just urge caution. Now, it went up, and it produced a new high above, what's that one? 29.91, but not a whole lot higher. And now it's drifted back down below, but I think it's just a pullback. If it goes back and tries to fill the gap, then you can add to a position. If you're long, add it below 27.75. Let it go down and fill the gap if that's its intent. It's not a huge gap, but still it produced a gap.
I was using 24 bucks on silver as your line in the sand. As long as it stayed pretty much above 24 bucks, my feeling was you just sit there and be long. Then, of course, this news came in from Reddit, and now you're getting paid. Now the problem is where are we going? And as far as my opinion is concerned, this 30 to 35 number would probably be the best case scenario, unless we're in some kind of a special situation where, you know, it really gets going and they collapse the gold to silver ratio, because the gold to silver ratio was way above 100, which I always felt was ridiculous. And now it's in the 60s. And so maybe somebody's pressing the gold to silver ratio a little bit. The last time gold was up at 1900, 2000, silver was at 50. So like I say, this thing, you know, as my buddy and me who've been in it for decades, you know, this thing could either be stalling out between here and 35. It could make a run at 50. And then he has some wave counts that says best case scenario could be 75. So there's a lot of potential. There's a lot of different scenarios that can unfold on silver here. That's very exciting. But also,
it is very exciting.
The further away you get from these long-term moving averages, it doesn't become less risky.
Correct. And the only caveat that I put in there is that, you know, like you mentioned earlier, the Reddit news, and so we've got all of the folks coming in through Robinhood and those brokerage firms which charge nothing. So they're going to throw all their money and push silver higher because they're now going to war with the shorts in silver. Bad choice.
Metal and the other thing is they're doing the same game as they did with the GameStop, where they're buying call options, and then the guy who's got to deliver the call options is buying stock. Well, here, the guys who are selling call options on the ETFs have to go out and buy physical, and that's why bullion market on silver is trading, I heard, about a dollar almost above spot, above the current prices.
Oh, okay.
So not a dollar. It's at $43 an ounce versus where we are at 30. So like $13 an ounce premium some of the silver bullion.
Yeah, I would be a seller as well.
You know what I mean? That's a pretty darn big premium, but it's a product of this buying calls, and they have to have physical silver behind it.
Yeah. So they are squeezing the physical, but not necessarily squeezing the future.
Yeah. And the physical, like I say, I mean, you know, you're buying at $45, which is, you know, $43, you know, 13 bucks over spot. That sounds like a recipe for trouble.
It is. And I just find that to be very dangerous. So I actually, based on what you just said, I would stay out of silver.
If we look at the dollar index, I don't see any collapse in the dollar right now.
No, it's got too much okay news to kind of stand on.
Yeah. And don't forget, if the dollar goes down, other currencies have to go up. Well, Asia is having their own set of problems, and Europe doesn't seem like they're getting out of their own way. So, you know, you're not going to go into the euro or British pound if they have no economy going on over there. And then you're not going to go into Japan, you know, or the other Asian currencies with a ton of money.
You know, I think that as long as the euro can hold its nose above 120,
that's about it. You're right. That's it. As long as it stays above that number, you're still in a bull market on the euro.
Yeah.
What do you think, before we get into the gold, what are you thinking of this Bitcoin? I use this GBTC as my go-to place. But it seems to me that we had a blow-off top there at 48, and we're in the process of digesting still.
Not only digesting, I think that because of the hype, it's just too... And even an experienced, long-term experienced trader, the volatility can wipe your entire account out in minutes. And that just to me is, I'm going to stay away from it.
Well, people don't understand, 95% of Bitcoins is being controlled by 2% of the accounts. So Bitcoin's volatility has a lot to do with lack of liquidity. And that's why it goes up through the roof, and that's why it collapses. So people want to know, why is it so volatile? Because it's being held by a very small amount of of accounts. Right. And ergo, you've got a lot of people trying to participate, either buying or selling, in a relatively illiquid environment.
Right. Very well
and
said.
That's exactly what happened with GameStop.
Yeah.
GameStop did not have the liquidity to take in that much buying, and ergo, the prices had to go up, you know?
Right. And but went up, they did.
The Bitcoin, I would think is a long-term and dollar cost average kind of deal, if anything, right?
In Bitcoin?
Yeah. If you're going to play Bitcoin, you got to put risk capital in there for sure. And then you've got to do dollar cost averaging because, along the way, you generally get opportunities.
But look at the guy who, this is it. I mean, not that I'm a scatterbrain, but sometimes I can be. He lost his password. Now he can't get into his account. It's worth $250 million.
Yeah. And that's, of course, why the GBTC is not a bad way to look to investigate that, because at least it trades on an exchange and you can sell anything out if it's on the exchange.
Right. But the other thing to me is that you're not getting anything. You're not getting any physical anything when you buy a Bitcoin because it's virtual. And so you get a certificate or you get something from somewhere. I don't know.
It's a scarcity item, really.
Yeah. And I'm too old fashioned. When you buy a stock, you can take delivery of the certificate. When you buy physical gold, you will take delivery of that gold.
Yeah. At least you have something you can hold on to.
Exactly.
With regards to the gold, what are you thinking there?
It's kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah.
It starts to rally and then it gets caught up and then it starts to go down. So I just think that what we're playing against is, again, the euro dollar, is against interest rates. And since that picture is still cloudy and mixed, so stays the price of gold.
Right.
I still like it. I still have a very large core position. But what I have done in that, I've moved most of it into actual physical gold, which is now being stored.
Yeah.
It is tough. I still love gold. I still think it is a storehouse of value. I don't care what they want to tell me about interest rates. It's like, I'm going to watch your guys' portfolios collapse and I'm still going to be worth because I have something that will always have value.
Yeah.
I think from here, there's a very high probability that we might get up closer to 1900, but then I think another pullback is in store.
Yeah.
And
it looks like it's trying to do a 1-2-3 formation, the rally from 1775 to 1950, the pullback here to about 1850. Now, if you take out 1950, I will be very much on the train.
Yeah.
Because I've gone with the gold stock type thing more because I've been in there for such a long time. I've been, accumulating the shares of a diversified fund. And
you could have better, you
like a GD, like a GDX would be an example.
Right. But I think personally for you, you get a better idea of the market when you're watching the miners.
That's why I think it still looks a little weak because these miners are still on defense, not offense.
Right. But remember, and again, what I continue to toss into the mix when you're trying to determine whether you want GDX or the mining stocks versus the actual physical is that always take a look at, and again, you've got the feel for the market, so maybe you're not including this, but I think if you're thinking of buying an individual like Newmont or Barrick or any of the big producers, you can go look on their websites, you can go into the company news and history, and you'll find out what it costs them per ounce to mine that gold.
Right.
And then you're going to be able to attach that to where is gold sitting now as to what will happen to that company. I mean, gold can go to 2000, but if it's costing them $1,950 to get it out of the ground,
right?
How much can they make?
Well, the two ones that I like to look at also, let's just put them up so you can take a look at them. GDXJ and SILJ. And those are the two that if you really think there's going to be a big, big move, might be worth a look.
The vineyard guys. Yeah. I'm with you. And again, same deal. I mean, if you're going to go through how many stocks are in this ETF?
A lot.
Good. So it wouldn't really behoove them because it's probably, if you could figure an average as to what, of all those companies together, what it costs them to get that gold out of the ground,
right,
then you're going to be able to price this thing a whole lot better.
Well, if people are going to make a lot of money in gold, then it's got to get way above 2,000. And if it gets way above 2,000, I doubt any mining company is going to have a hard time making a profit.
I agree.
Particularly ones that would be in an ETF that's being run by, I don't know who runs this one, but these guys, they do homework before they put somebody in this thing. Look at the silver one though. That's something that I was involved in. And
what was that? SILJ. Oh my. Yeah. Reddit.
Yep. And, but I mean, way before Reddit, it was a good play,
Yeah.
And then it went into a sideways thing between where was it going sideways between about 13 and 16 for a while.
So this is actually Now, this one I like, Jim, and I'll tell you why. Because, see, silver miners, because silver has been so low for so long,
probably have learned how to make it cheap.
Yeah, yeah. So now that it's sitting up here, look at the gap. It made a, along with the regular market, it made a nice, it made a better gap in the miners than it did in the others. In fact, it went to a new high, at least on the daily chart.
Yeah.
So yeah, I like it. No, I agree with you. I would keep my eye on that. And as long as this stuff remains in play, you keep an eye on momentum or stochastic or an RSI that you use and buy it on those dips as long as your RSI agrees with it and let it rally.
I mean, you'll notice by looking at any of these graphs, participating closer to the moving average seems to be a better deal. Huh?
Yes. And when it gets too far away from the moving average, which is a great thing that you mention all the time.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm going to let you fill that in.
Listen, nobody knows where the prices are going. So the moving averages are based on factual information, price and time. And so when anything gets very, very far away from the mean, as they say, there is a tendency to go back to the mean at some point. But there are occasions, because nothing is for sure, that they can go parabolic on you. But, you know, parabolic, doesn't last forever. As you saw with the GameStop, I don't think is doing quite as well as it was. And the silver went to 30, and then for months it's never been at 30. And gold went to 2100, and now for months and months it never got to 2100. So, you know, parabolic ends, and when it ends, you go through a pretty long period of time before you see that price again. Put it this way, last time gold went to 1900, 2000, it took 8 years to get back to that price. So, you know, you got to be on the Pritikin diet if you get into the wrong, on the wrong side of some of these things.
Well said, my friend.
You know, now a lot of people don't have 20 years to get back to break even, right?
No, they do not. Right. So again, just to recap, and including yours, always when you're thinking about you're going to start a position and you want to go to the junior miners in the silver or gold, please look at a daily or longer term chart and get a grip on where these moving averages are.
Yeah. So. And, obviously a dollar cost averaging can be a decent idea, but... Yep. Sometimes, you know, if things get high enough, you just have to chalk it off to, I'm not going to be in this one. Let's go wait for the next one, you know?
Right.
Because, jumping into the $500,000 automobile because you forgot to buy one might not be the way to go, you know?
Right.
Anything else on the board that you're looking at,
I am, well, like many others, I do keep a very close eye on the 30-year bond.
Okay.
It's a major index and it sits below one, it's sits at one between 168 and 175. And so it's kind of what I would call a box of doom. And so it needs to either break down, which would tell you interest rates are going higher. But with our new Fed chair, that's not the game plan. So we're going to have to see some really bad news before that thing would really start to, for rates to really begin to rise, let me say. So, but now it's still kind of playing in there because there's still too much stuff out there that we got to get resolved or at least have a clear understanding of before I think we'll really see interest rates go one way or the other. But I keep an eye on just helps me gauge dollar, helps me gauge gold, helps me gauge, you know, silver and things of that nature as to what I think is going to happen.
What's the symbol on that one anyway?
For me, it's ZB. There you go. U.S. Treasury bond futures. Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah. Now, we all know that it had a blow off top up at 180 back in March when everybody was panicking. And we know that it's been downtrending now ever since then. So it's been a year of going down. With regards to most people obviously think that that trend will continue and continue and continue. And maybe they're correct, but it's possible that we could have a counter trend rally for a little while, right?
Yes, because the other thing to bear in mind, it's like, you know, we're still not out of the woods with the damage that the pandemic has created to the economy, to the broader economy.
Right.
Again, if you're a member of some select few, you're not feeling any pain at all. In fact, you're sitting flush.
Yeah.
But if you've got the majority unable to go out and participate in the economy, then I think we need to continue to look at that. And if it produces too many troubles, like we don't get a stimulus package passed, we don't get things back in line, then rates are going to go up because we'll have no choice. They will have to, you know, they may, but I think they'll be forced higher against the necessity to print.
Yeah. So, and there'll just be an exodus of people who are willing to loan money for no interest. That's why Apple's going out there and hitting it hard. They have absolutely no need for cash, but they're going to be raising billions and billions of dollars because I heard some of their stuff's being issued at 0.09%, not even 1% interest.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't take unlimited money at that level, knowing fully well that interest rates are going to be higher down the road? So all I have to do is borrow here underneath one. and then invested in bonds at 3%, and now they got a 2% spread with no risk.
Right, and here's the other thing, bear in mind, the latest or the stimulus package that got passed in December included a large, I don't know the top number, I don't know the number, but it's billions of dollars that were now set aside and earmarked for payroll protection plans, are Small Business Administration sending out that money. That money's being sent out at 1%.
Right.
So you're absolutely right on what you're saying. And that's what I think that we need to continue to keep an eye on that. If you really want that overall solid look at the market.
We are at the top of the hour. Let's tell people how they can get a hold of you and how some of the stuff you do, keeping things on a relatively short leash, meaning the day trading type stuff. Why don't you explain that to them?
Okay. Again, I am Michael Filiguera. I have my new website, which is TradersHelpingTraders.com. I encourage people to check it out. I am there under Eye of the Storm and LogicalSignals.com. We also have some information from a few other people that I have worked with, and they're putting things on there. So it's going to hopefully develop into a site where you can come in and get the information or get what you need. I hope to be adding indicators and different things that people might be doing so that there's a place where you can come in and get those. I'm really looking forward to getting it going because I think that there's a lot of people that still want to come into the market and they're going to need that help. Now, me personally, I do carry core positions, but I don't carry overnight positions in terms of indexes or individual stocks or things of that nature. If I do, I'm going to go to the options, which is a different story. But I day trade, and I day trade primarily in the NASDAQ, the S&P, and the gold, the bonds. But primarily right now, it's the NASDAQ because the volatility is absolutely fabulous, and it can be quite easy to really make a good chunk of change, but it's just as easy to lose a chunk of change. So it's learning when you got to, you know, where you want to put your stops, where you want to enter, et cetera, et cetera. And I offer that type of a service through coaching. And I decided that I don't necessarily want to have a trade room now. I like to write. I like to do podcasts. So those will still be available. But coaching is where I really kind of want to put some focus in helping others who really want to hone and better their own day trading, because there is a lot of money to be made. And as many can probably tell you, there's a lot of money to be lost. So you kind of have to put together a business plan and know kind of some basics and get some stuff down so that you're going to be good. And that's what I want to do through coaching. If people are interested in coaching, you can either send me an email. I can set up a time where we could talk one-on-one and maybe answer any questions. But for those who have an interest and they're willing to, that they want to sign up, I am offering a discount. But again, send me an email and I'll make sure that you get that discount to the first 10. I'm limiting it to right now to 10 to see how that goes.
Okay, sounds great. For optionprofessor.com, we have a weekly market update that we've published, and we go over quite a bit of information there that is free of charge. And all you need to do is put your email in at optionprofessor.com. That's singular, optionprofessor.com. And you'll be in the queue. And then every Friday or Saturday, we send something out to you. And then if you'd like some ideas on what the specific opinions we have on the stock market, about how to get fixed income cash flow coming in, how to take advantage of the crude and energy markets, the metals, as well as international markets, you know, Asia, Europe, Latin America. We go over all that stuff, and it's free of charge as far as the weekly update is concerned. And then you could become a subscriber. We explain that as well. So that's optionprofessor.com. I'm going to turn it back over to David. Michael, always great to talk to you, and we'll be talking again down the road.
Thank you. Same here, Jim.
All right. Thanks, guys. Great conversation today. So just a quick reminder for everyone, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube or your favorite podcast directory or app, and you can get instant updates on all the new episodes that way. You can also go to timingresearch.com to get access to any of the episodes there as well, including this one as soon as I can get it posted. And I just want to thank my guests again for today, Michael Filiguera of TradersHelpingTraders.com and the Option Professor of OptionProfessor.com. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.